The Prime Minister has refused to say whether two Rwanda men resettled in Australia after being charged with terror offences in the United States are being held in detention. The pair had been in United States custody for 15 years, accused of participating in a horrific 1999 attack on tourists in Uganda, but under the refugee swap deal were sent to Australia last November. Here's Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister, at the National Press Club today.
Every single person that comes to Australia under any such arrangements are the subject of both character and security assessments by Australian security agencies and our immigration authorities. Now, I don't intend to make a commentary on allegations that have been made in open source information, but simply to assure Australians that they are the processes that we undertake, and these are the same security agencies that have thwarted 15 terrorist attacks.
Senior legal affairs contributor for Politico, Josh Gerstein, is an American journalist who broke the story, and he joins me now. Welcome to RN Drive.
Hey, happy to be with you.
So this has now been a big story in Australia, and you started it. The ABC here in Australia has confirmed too that the two men have been resettled into the Australian community. So tell me exactly what's happened here.
Well, it sounds like what we've stumbled upon here rather accidentally is some element of this so-called people swap deal that Prime Minister Turnbull cut a couple years ago with President Barack Obama. We really came at it from the other end. We were trying to figure out where these two men who had once been charged with this massacre in Uganda, where they had been sent. We knew that they'd been challenging efforts to deport them. They didn't want to go back to Rwanda. And last November, they abruptly dropped their court cases, but there was no immediate indication of where they'd gone. So it really required about 6 months of reporting on and off to try to figure out where they ended up. And at the end of the day, it turned out the answer to that question was Australia, which then brought us back to the whole story of the people swap and the various trade-offs that seem to have taken place over the last couple of years between the two countries.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison didn't deny your story today, but gave away no specific details about the case. You know what he's had to say today. What do you make of it?
Well, I find it curious that he would say that full character checks, for example, have been done on these individuals. I guess it's possible that 15 or 20 years on from the events in question, one could conclude that maybe they weren't guilty, or maybe whatever other activities they may have participated in as rebel fighters in Rwanda around the time of the genocide aren't really a current threat. But the notion that these people would be sort of the highest caliber of character, that they would otherwise qualify as refugees to Australia under any kind of normal process, I have to say, is rather laughable. There simply have to be other people on the roster with a cleaner record than these gentlemen.
So do you think this raises questions about the way Australian border and security authorities perform the character assessments? Because you say you just can't see how they would be deemed appropriate.
It does. I mean, one of the issues I've heard people bringing up today, and we knew when this story came out would be an issue, was my understanding there is that the government has sort of boasted about the fact that when they were screening some of the Nauru and Manus refugees, they discovered that some of them had faced criminal charges overseas, and they blocked those people from coming to the to Australia, or warned that they shouldn't even be brought in for medical treatment. It seems very curious that those same kinds of checks would have completely cleared these other folks, who not only were charged with murder and not only with terrorism offenses, but for several years the U.S. was trying to get the death penalty, the ultimate punishment against these two individuals and a third man from Rwanda who apparently wasn't cleared for the trip.
The refugee swap deal was, of course, hatched by the former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and the Obama administration. You note that efforts Mr. Turnbull made when dealing with President Trump to keep the deal alive, a deal Mr. Trump labelled stupid. What have you gleaned from the heated phone exchange that led to these two men finding their way to Australia?
Well, it's hard to know whether this deal was entirely done before that call. I suspect it may well have been. I've been told that the issue was raised with Australians by U.S. officials in 2015 and 2016 as that deal was being cut. Then folks may remember the deal almost went off the rails after Trump was elected. As you mentioned, he thought it was a stupid, dumb deal. But there are exchanges in that conversation, which was later leaked, the conversation between Trump and Turnbull, where Prime Minister Turnbull says things to the effect of, we'll be taking some people that the previous administration was very keen on getting out of the United States. And he talks about taking some people that were essentially very undesirable or unattractive candidates. And, you know, at the time, nobody really knew what he was talking about. It didn't seem like he was talking about typical Central American refugees or even some Cubans that may have come across under the same, broad scope of this deal. But it does certainly sound like language that would cover these Rwandans who had become a real thorn in the side for U.S. officials.
You alluded to the fact that their confession was as a result of torture. What do you know about that? What can you tell us about the way that it was obtained?
Well, the reason their criminal case went off the rails after they were brought to the United States is the defense lawyers said that the statements they had initially made to Rwandan authorities, the Rwandan military and other Rwandan security officials, that those statements were obtained through some type of torture, and that later the Americans swept in, took everything at face value, and decided to proceed with the prosecution. And the judge essentially rejected all that, said she had determined that they had been tortured, that they were essentially beaten when they were initially in Rwandan custody, and that the Americans couldn't really, you know, separate their investigation from the Rwandan one.
So a few people are texting and asking the question. So they're alleged. There's no proof of their guilt, right?
Well, I mean, they were charged, but the case was eventually dropped. There are their confessions. The tricky thing about this case was there really wasn't a lot of proof beyond their confessions, but we should make clear that's proof about the criminal charges against them. There was plenty of evidence that
they were members of a group called ALIR, which is an offshoot of the Inter-Hamwe militia that was considered responsible for much of the genocide that took place
in Rwanda
in 1994.
We're having some trouble with the line, but I'll come to one other question. Is it possible, as you know, that, you know, in Australia, rather, we are having an election in 2 days, and what kind of impact do you think this will have, or what do you know about what more might be revealed? I mean, this is one step in the story. Is there more to come?
Well, one of the real questions here will be, you know, was this part of an explicit quid pro quo between the U.S. and Australia? Why did it take so long for the men to come over if it was, initially raised a couple years ago? And did Australia agree to accept any other sort of undesirable refugee candidates, people that might have a very checkered background because they were under some type of political pressure from the United States? And those are all open questions at this point.
So you're saying you know of this case, but there could be others. It raises questions about who else came to Australia.
Right. Was it only these three that were sort of a trade-off for the potential of unloading, say, 1,200 refugees to the United States? Or were there other messy cases where the U.S. wanted people moved somewhere, either from the U.S. or from other places around the world, and the Australians agreed to take up that charge? I think that's the kind of thing we're going to be digging into in the coming weeks and months.
Well, we'll be reading, and of course, the Australians here are poring over this too. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Josh Gerstein is a senior legal affairs contributor for Politico. He broke this story, and really, it did derail, I think, I don't know if that's too strong a word, but it did disrupt the Prime Minister's final speech at the National Press Club, because he ended up being asked a lot of questions about this story when, of course, he just wanted to talk about his agenda and why he wants to be elected on Saturday. But he did have to field questions on this story.